Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 18th of March, 2021. We have gone a full circuit of the moon, or the moon of the sun, since the declaration of this near universal lockdown because of COVID. So many things have changed, and yet so much remains the same. For instance, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Ways Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And Dave, how are you doing this week?
Well, it's funny. As you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, so much stays the same. I'm like, yeah, because this is Jim Hedger and Dave Davies on year number 14 16? Or something. I don't know. It's like really long we've been doing this. It's just. And every week, what I love, I think we are just absolutely truly blessed. First, because we've managed to still like each other, you know, like after this long, so that's a thing. But also that every week, just like this week, we're able to go, I'm in an industry where I have a lot to talk about because a lot happened again.
Never ending. Changes and information indeed. What was the biggest thing this week for you? The biggest thing of all the stuff that happened?
Well, you know what? I mean, it's sort of a funny one because it happens every year as well. But probably the biggest thing to me, just because of what it meant, was we passed the anniversary March 15th. I actually have a calendar reminder every March 15th to just remind me. This week, in 1985, the first domain name was registered.
Oh wow.
Symbolics, and it is still online.
I'll try and do that one too.
It's so important, right? Like just as this, like this thing you don't really think about, but it had to be the first one, and somebody had to just the brains and technology that went behind that, right? Because before then it was all just IP addresses and a bunch of academia and military sort of using this thing. And somebody went, the world needs a naming convention because this will become bigger. And that was just sort of to me, the symbolics of, such a bad pun there. Symbolic though, of just that penny dropping that this is about to be a huge thing and human beings need a way to function with this ecosystem.
And with that, we got Sir Tim Berners-Lee working at CERN in Switzerland, who came up with the World Wide Web, acting on the TCIP convention invented by Vint Cerf. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of his co-inventor. Cerf is now evangelist at Google, evangelist of all things cool and interesting at Google. Tim Berners-Lee, interestingly, he now splits his time between Oxford and MIT, and he's working on a project to reinvent the World Wide Web as we know it. Berners-Lee Berners-Lee has a problem with the economy of data, especially being that data is us, all the information about us being farmed out to, any corporate Tom, Dick, or Harry, most of whom turn out to be dicks. Berners-Lee has a problem with his great innovation, the World Wide Web itself being used this way. It was never supposed to be used this way. He's trying to come up with a new World Wide Web that will allow the user privacy, allow the user domain over their own personal information. Here's the catch. If it's free, the product is you.
Yeah.
If it ain't free, somebody's got to pay for it. And if you're not the product, you're probably the payer. So this is the catch with Berners-Lee's new web system. So far, it's probably going to be a subscription model. And that's hard to see in a world where people will get a Disney, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and whatever cable subscription that they'll pay happily each month.
Right. And at the same time, like, you know what, I think about certain things. I think about when I'm surfing on Facebook or display ads are fired at me, and I all of a sudden am presented with an ad and I'm like, wow, I did not know that product existed 3 seconds ago. And now there is nothing I want more than that thing, right? Like where the personalization, understanding who I am, the very thing that causes me serious privacy concerns, and they are addressing them, but serious privacy concerns are also the thing that I go, oh, but I really like that, right? Like I like what it does as far as advertising and presenting me with personalized experiences. I get that we're working on ways to merge these things together. But I'd like to see that play out a little more first. But there is the good of these, you know, handing your soul over to the internet and going, do what you will with it. And being the product actually also has, because I'm the product, you need to be able to sell to me efficiently. And it's being done pretty well. And inefficiently with, you know, horrible spam, but we won't talk about that part because that's not really based on, you know, the personalization and privacy concerns that we have.
Well, Berners-Lee isn't the only person with obviously lots of people have major privacy concerns about the internet and how our data is being used. Berners-Lee isn't the only person of note actively trying to do something about it. A new search engine, a new search engine is on the horizon, apparently. Ex-Googlers have formed Neeva, N-E-E-V-A, Neeva. how can you tell that it's ex-Googlers who made this?
it's... You know, I don't know. Here's where I sort of feel for all of these companies. I understand what you're trying to do. I think it is a wonderful thing that you are trying to do. But
check out who's trying to do it though. Okay. You got names like Sidhar Ramaswamy, Vivek Raghunathan. And I'm sorry if I just mangled the name. But see, Sidhar worked at Google and helped build the ad division. Vivek was Google's VP of monetization at YouTube. He worked at Google for 12 years. Mm-hmm. Udi Manbar, one of the legendary programmers at Google, at Yahoo, and at Amazon, is on this team. The former vice president, the former Google Vice President of Global Sales and Operations is on this team, and the former VP of Engineering at Google is on this team. This team has put itself 3 miles south of Google in Mountain View. But the point I'm trying to get is some heavy players here. And guess what their business model is? This is the part that kills me again. Subscription.
Yeah.
See, they want you to have your data, but... if you're not the product, you're going to have to be the payer again.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm on the beta. Like I'm signed up to be a, you know, when you're willing to let me in. But where I feel for, well, I don't feel for them, where I think it's almost fool's errand-y, but not necessarily. Like one will get through somewhere, right. Or one or two will get through and start to chisel away at market share a little bit. But you're competing with companies that are making monster money and can then invest monster money into their algorithms. So not only are you competing with ads and just the sort of barrier of needing to charge me, but on top of that, the other companies can produce better results. So I may not I may have no problem paying $10 a month to have a search engine without ads, but if your results are not going to be worth that money, like if the result decline is so much worse that I'd rather just deal with the inconvenience of advertising. Yeah. And I'll go put that in quotes, because even the advertising is getting better and more targeted, and you know, with their the quality scores are improving, like improving the results and stuff. So and they're not horrible.
For what it's worth, we also know in, was it 2 months, 3 months from now, Google's going to be dropping cookies entirely.
Yeah.
And going with another brilliant name, Flow.
Flow.
The Federated Learning of, oh, goodness gracious.
I know. I was like, oh, what is it?
Federated Learning of Obnoxious Environments, something like that. Anyway, the Federated Learning of cohorts, of groupings of affiliated peoples, Flock.
Yeah.
Now, I'm seeing a weird stirring in the force here, Dave. Most of our career experience has been watching Google introduce products that are like designed to disrupt what used to be Microsoft's dominance on the desktop, eh?
Yeah.
I'm involved in a group that's shifting everything into Microsoft Teams. And Microsoft Teams is absurdly functional.
Yeah.
As a business fulfillment space. I think that's what you would call these, business fulfillment software. Just trying to cover all bases, right?
Yeah.
So it's think of all the needs, the scope of needs that goes into making this kind of software. Only the big houses can actually do this. You have to have control of email, of some massive email system. You got to be like uber secure. You have to have a massive cloud you can store stuff in. You have to have the capacity to like convert files between, say, Google Sheets and into Microsoft Excel or back and forth or whatever. You have to be like counteroperable with like who knows how many different systems.
Mm-hmm.
Only the big houses could do something like this. Google could pull off something like Microsoft Teams, but every time they try, they screw it up and they kill it.
Yeah.
So they never actually fulfill the business of creating business fulfillment programs.
Right.
Microsoft has. But for our entire lives, our entire career lives, we've watched Google try to disrupt all these systems. Now we're seeing people moving away from Google because Google's just goofed up so many of their attempts to disrupt all these systems. And I find the irony so much is pushing back to the other evil, big evil, Microsoft.
Yeah, I know. You and I both, like, you know, people who are, you know, I'll go young. It wouldn't necessarily be super young, but younger than me, you know, wouldn't remember the like 80s battle with Microsoft and those sort of things. As you and I could sort of chuckle, and I'm sure you do every time you're like, well, and poor Microsoft, you know, trying to compete for ad revenue, and like they crushed like everything, right? Like they sort of owned everything. And it is a good reminder, because you and I at the time, nor would anybody, have seen a world where another company was about to just be a dominator in sort of the global space. Like when we think of the global ecosystem of tech, we think of Google. Mm-hmm. That's just first name on probably most people's lips. And so it is interesting that at some point another disruptor will be there, and it won't be Microsoft. Like somebody else will step in and go, I've got this. When the internet, or when the world fundamentally changes, and our interactions with each other and technology fundamentally changes, something new will come. And it'll be interesting to see who that is.
What might it take to fundamentally change the world? Let me think. Shutting it down for a whole year, perhaps. And this is the whole thing. I think the world is fundamentally shifting, and it's not shifting in Google's favor exactly. People... Do you remember the problem that SEO houses faced a few years ago when clients wanted large agency services and they wanted it all under one roof, and it was really hard to get your foot in the door if you didn't offer everything?
Yeah.
The cons- it's funny. Agents, businesses don't want that anymore. Businesses now want highly specialized expert services, but the consumer wants it all under one roof. They want it all compacted into one box. Yeah. So it's as easy as possible to use, probably because we've all been forced into our much larger boxes and are now communicating through technologies. We want to streamline everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's neat. Weird evolutions.
Well, I know I have like one of our clients contacted me and was like, you know your stuff. And they'd actually asked for a little bit of my feedback. I'm actually later today going to be giving them a bit of feedback on paid search, but they specifically do not want us to do their paid search because we do organic. Like we do their organic and they specifically want somebody, a different entity to do their paid search. But they wanted my feedback on who, because they wanted to make sure I would work well with them.
Good. I was just about to make a point of that. So much more can happen when the two sides of the SERPs work together.
Yeah. Well, and indeed, and it will, and I won't get into detail because I don't know how it's finalized, but it was like a wonderful sort of like, okay, you trust me to do this and you want me to just stay focused and just focus on this. And they are in a highly complex space, so I appreciate it. But it's interesting because, yeah, like later today, I'm helping them with some of their campaigns because their person doesn't start until April 1st. So it's like, you trust me a bit with this, but you don't want me focusing on that. And I think that is, I think that is pretty atypical of exactly what you're talking about, is people going, I want the best of the best at what they do for me. And they should just do that. And then I'll get somebody else. And you may find them all at an agency. You might, but
I'll tell you, man, the desperate scrambling that happened exactly this time last year separated the wheat from the chaff. Like I know so many people, how to say this? This is a terrible thing to say, but it's the truth. And it's a horrible thing. I'm not going to say, I know so many people who aren't in the industry anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel bad for them and I feel okay for the industry in many ways.
Right.
Okay, that was a crappy thing to say, but, you know, it happens. friends, we got to take a break. You're listening to Webcology on WMR.FM. It is, my goodness, like almost springtime, the 18th of March, 2021. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beastalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. We're back after these messages.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Synergize your search engine education from 101 to rockstar level.
Only on WMR.FM.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology on WMR.FM. It's the 18th of March, 2021, and this is Jim Hedger from the Joys Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And Dave, as you just so, I think, completely eloquently put it, whoa, that vulnerability on Eliminator in WordPress?
Yeah.
So if you used Eliminator, the page building plugin Eliminator to build your page on WordPress, you might be in for a bump. You mightn't be controlling your website any longer. Somebody else might be doing it for you.
Yes, just to correct, I know it's a misread. It's Elementor.
Just Elementor, I'm sorry.
For listeners who might be like, that, I'm not using that one, so that's the only reason I was like, oh, I should maybe clarify.
What did I call it?
Eliminator.
Eliminator, oh my goodness.
It can eliminate your website, so that is a pretty valid.
I'm thinking of Van Halen or something. Okay, so Elementor. If you built your website with Elementor, you have a vulnerability that allows hackers to control your site.
Yep, it is patched. So if you update the plugin, you're good.
I'm really glad to read. It was every time I have a WordPress site or I build a WordPress site, I use WordFence. I am so I don't know what the word, I'm loyal to WordFence because they've saved me so many times.
Yeah. I use it all the time. Although it's funny because one of my clients also insists on getting the notifications, and I've now just had to go, it's not an attack on you. Like, I'll just like see that y'all get the emails like, and there's a sudden spike in malicious attacks that like, and we've plugged up, like we blocked these IPs or whatever. And I'll just now have to proactively, it's not personal. They're not attacking you. This is just a script running. I think he's got it now, but you know, and fair enough. Well, there's actually a couple of clients that I have to do that with, and fair enough, because you get these emails, and if you don't understand that these are just bots that are trying to like just brute force their way through your like login screen, and they're consistently coming in with admin. Don't worry, we don't have any users named admin. But other than that, it's a fantastic plugin. I agree with you. You actually introduced me to that plugin. I don't know, 5-6 years ago, you mentioned it on this show, and I was like, okay, let's start using that.
There was a time, I remember this, I was controlling a network of websites, three different networks of sites, one on the West Coast, one in Central Canada, one on the East Coast, and 2014, I think it was, New Year's Day got hacked. The West Coast network got hacked, and it was awful. Just a terrible experience because I was out of town. And so I had to hightail it back. It was a terrible thing. Sworn by WordFence ever since. Incidentally, never had a problem with a WordPress site after that.
And that tells the story itself. So this is probably the biggest plug we have ever given to a plugin.
Actually, that's true. We shouldn't do that, should we? But yeah. Hey, you know what? We should, because
it's good advice.
And a secure web is a good web.
Yeah.
Speaking of, it's been a bad week for vulnerabilities. Microsoft Exchange got hacked, and that left 7 million were vulnerable because of Elementor. Exchange left 100 million or so systems open.
Okay. I did not know this until right now.
Now, for what it's worth, Microsoft has issued a patch, and your system admin is almost certainly gotten and worked that patch. But for a few days there, the world's email systems were almost entirely open.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what you can do after that. I also read, there's something, I don't have any information on this in front of me. I just read it on Facebook just before we went to air. Apparently, there's a hackers got a hold of a script that runs devices on old old Apple systems, iOS systems. So your peripheries, your printer, your scanner, all that stuff, if it's 7 years or older, mightn't be working today. You might be getting a note from Apple saying, we don't think this device is safe. I understand that happened as well. And lastly, I heard on CBC when I woke up this morning that, and I'm sure our American listeners have the exact same problem with rogue phone calls coming and pretending to be the IRS or up here, the Canada Revenue Agency or what have you. their data phishing phone calls, and they make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per caller per day. They're going through RoboLisks. Here's the weird thing. From all these hacks that have happened, Microsoft Exchange, banking hacks, the credit hacks, all the stuff that we've heard of in the last 5 or 6 years, the scammers have created personal profiles on many of us, and they're selling them on the dark web for pennies a name. And these profiles have your credit card information, your tax information, all the stuff a scammer can use to convince you they are your bank or the tax man or what have you, to scare you into giving them more information so they can get all your money.
Right.
Be really careful, folks. It's insane. We weren't even supposed to be talking about this today, but it just sort of came up with the vulnerabilities. It's amazing.
I know what the government and Mary's just had this hard and fast rule, and I think it's a good one, so I've stuck to it. She's like, you need to stick to this, is you can demand everything in letter.
Yeah.
Like, be mailed. And she's like, she just always demands everything. You need any information, demand it in a letter, and I will call you at that number if it's a legit, if it came from a legitimate source. So anyway.
So vulnerabilities everywhere.
Yep.
SEO is a game of partially closing vulnerabilities and or taking advantage of directing things. That bad segue. Damn. I thought it sounded so smart in my head too. I want to get into Google is updating its robot text directives. It's updating the guidance it gives webmasters and is asking for your help. Yours, Dave, mine too, and all of our helps. Gary Eads wrote on Twitter the other day that Google's going to be updating their help docs. And if SEOs have a problem with the docs, now's the time to talk about it. I love the way things get phrased here.
I just want to answer that back and go, well, it depends.
Hey, you should. Please do. But I actually, if you have anything to add to how Google tells us to use robots text or robots tags, robot directing tags, let Gary know. And yeah, if not, forever hold your P's and Q's, I guess. Or screw it. Just complain. Just complain a lot.
I'm good at that.
Okay.
But you know why? It's because SEO has gotten so darn hard.
You know, okay. Has SEO gotten harder in the last 5 years? Yes, no, it depends.
It depends. Good.
I'd say the scope has gotten much bigger, but the tool chest has gotten much richer. What do you think? I mean, you know what? SEO would have to say it's much, much harder today than it was 5 years ago. But
I tend to agree in sorts, and I have sort of two caveats to that. Is one is, but really it's gotten equally hard for everybody. So as long as it's like, when an algorithm, it's like, was it a bad algorithm? I don't know. It depends. Like, there's still 10 results, right? Like, depends what part of the equation you are in that on that page, right? Whether you're viewing it as good or bad. And I do think that there is an element as Google keeps pushing forward, as Google, and I'm using Google as a placeholder because Bing in their own right is doing some really, really excellent work. But as the engines are pushing forward so solidly, they're making it almost deceptively simple, right? Like where we used to have to like crank out, hit keyword densities, make sure all of our heading tags were exactly right, store it in exactly this order. With rendering, with the complexity that Google's putting behind it, they're actually making some of our job easier because they're much closer to that world where you don't really have to worry about negative links. We kind of have that for the most part. There's still things slip through the cracks, but negative attacks on links, we don't hear about them as much as we used to, right? Like where you would hear about that sort of black hat because Google's detection systems have gotten better because they're rendering properly and because they're understanding page content better. good content is tending to surface because it's good content, not because, and because it fulfills their query intents, mm-hmm. not because I've crammed in keywords at 3.5%, right? And like jammed them into my keyword tag and meta description and title tag, really. So has it gotten harder or has Google actually made it a little easier? There's certainly a lot more technical. The technical side of web development has gotten harder, but JavaScript's harder than HTML. Like that's just web dev. Like the web has gotten harder, but as an SEO, there's certainly more moving parts on the technical side, but I think it's actually gotten easier on other sides. Certainly from the aspect of the UX people who actually had to care what these SEOs were producing because they tried to make people like it too. Their lives have gotten better in the SEO realm of being able to go just build good content that's about a subject matter, cover it thoroughly, and you're going to do okay, sort of side of things. Anyway, that's just my two bits. So I think on the technical side, yes, but on many others, not so much.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I think SEO has become much harder because the scope has become much bigger. Website, like you said, websites are technically more sophisticated, and also websites are bigger. Like we now work on sites that you could count in the hundreds of thousands or millions, and sometimes you don't even count. You can't. Don't bother.
Yeah.
Tens and tens and tens of unending numbers of self-creating pages. There is so much more SEOs can do today than we were able to do 5 years ago when the common prescription was throw some links at it. Today, you can mess with markup. Mm-hmm. Today, you can affect the way Google My Business listings look. You can add video to Google My Business listings. You can have your client address the search results directly in Google My Business. They can just be there talking to search results if you make the video right. Mm-hmm. Why not? Mm-hmm. So there's more that can be done, and that adds the more you can do. The more tools you have, but the more tools you got, the greater the degree of complexity.
Right.
So yeah, it's harder, but I think it's also much more effective.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about tools. It has gotten harder, but taking a, I guess more in the internet marketing, but just because it serves as a good example. Once upon a time, we would do social media marketing and you would have to go to each one of your social properties and you would have to check through all your posts or tweets or whatever. And now you have like Social Sprout or Loomly or whatever, like where the tools are now pulling everything together. So you now have one dashboard. SEMrush has a decent one, right? Where it's actually simplified the management and administration side of things. So there's more of the properties to deal with, but we have more tools available to simplify that process. So is it harder?
In fact, I'd like to use SEMrush as an example.
You mispronounced that, but that's okay.
No, oh, well, see, I think we have to go back and forth. Next time I have to pronounce it SEMrush, okay. But after that, you have to pronounce it SEMrush.
Oh.
And that way we're covering every base.
I think that gives me a rash.
No, but it's annoying as heck. That's why I want to do it. Okay, so I want to use SEMrush as an example, and just that they, what was their valuation on the New York Stock Exchange when they debuted last week?
Ooh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
But it was in the tens of millions.
It was solid, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, or actually, sorry, not tens of millions. I think they're valued in the hundreds of millions, and that's a measure of how complex this game has gotten. You know, one of our premier tool sets is now trading on the New York Stock Exchange and is valued in
it's at 101.
The 11 figures. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of makes you feel all grown up, sort of, like, you know.
And like, back in 2004, I had to make a decision on which path I was going to take. And, well, my company's not worth $101.5 million, so.
I know. You know what kept me awake last night? Honestly, this is a terrible admission. in 2004 or 2005, I was given a chance to have three or four developers at my fingertips to make a slew of SEO tools. The problem was the company I was working with had made a bunch of bum tools, like just horrible. I wouldn't recommend them on my worst enemy tools.
Okay.
And I didn't take the offer seriously enough at that time. I'm just trying to go to sleep last night. You know, you're just about to drift off. You're in that really comfy spot. And then boom, it hits you. Oh my God. Now I get it. That's what kept me awake last night.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's totally fair when you cut your own throat.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about Core Web Vitals, and I want to talk about a couple new things. But we should probably take a break first, because that could go, because any of the stuff we could talk could go on for a little bit. So, on behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You're listening to Webcology on WMR.FM on, believe it or not, the day before the weekend that spring begins, the 18th of March, 2021. We're back after these messages.
Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now as a future podcaster is the myth that it takes an enormous amount of time or effort to produce a high-quality professional podcast. Luckily for you, there's a solution to your problem. If you're an online marketer who really needs to grow an audience of buyers but can't do all the heavy lifting alone, then here's the solution you're looking for. Introducing the DFY Podcasting System. Here's what you get. 30 minutes of one-on-one training. A weekly podcast for you or your company. Distribution to almost every podcast portal. An embeddable player for your website. An ebook called How to Podcast, created for WMR.FM show hosts. And much, much more. And best of all, you'll start seeing results with the DFY podcast system within a couple of weeks. You're just one podcast away from growing brand awareness and engagement in your business. Log on to podcast.wmr.fm and sign up for a deeply discounted rate today. That's podcast.wmr.fm.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on WMR.FM. It is the 18th of March, 2021, and here at WMR, we pride ourselves on being cultured and passing our tastes on to our listeners. And today we discuss the classic film, The Princess Bride. Because as it turns out, the one and only, the great, Brasco the Great, has not seen The Princess Bride. Mind-blowing. So everybody out there at Radioland and all friends of Brasco, I urge you to twist his arm as much as you possibly can to watch that movie, because it will improve his life. As it will improve yours if you haven't seen it yet. Watch that film. This has been a message from WMR.FM.
Hey, we're having fun this show.
Indeed. Okay, so let's get to some real fun. Stuff that really Brasco has seen The Princess Bride. Never trust the media. Oh, well.
Still good advice for the listeners if they haven't.
Yeah, trust us on this. Something that is really important, maybe not. It's hard to tell. It's a Google thing. Core Web Vital scores. Are they going to dramatically affect web ranking? Yes, no. And remember when we did the transfer to secured socket layer HTTPS?
Mm-hmm.
And that was so important, and it is important for a secure mobile web, but remember, one thing most webmasters didn't consider, I know I didn't when I did the transfer over, was third-party plugins that are running in the WordPress, in the back end of the WordPress site. Have they changed over to HTTPS? And if they hadn't, your site might appear to be unsecure.
Right.
Incidentally, there's an interesting class action about that, but we can talk about that another time. Similarly, will browser extensions that you have running on your computer, or extensions you will any browser extensions wreck Core Web Vital scores? Is it possible? I'd say no, but because I don't think it's. But anyway, that's a argument happening in the SEO world right now.
Yeah, well, and you think like anything that loads anything can. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so if it's pulling in, some, especially if you want to be malicious, some like massive image, right. To just like, I want to screw with this person's largest content paintful or something, right. Like, just like, I'm going to pull in from this, like have this plugin that's pulling from a third party resource, some like 3000 pixel wide image. Yeah, you could. I could see it really mucking about with some Core Web Vitals. Would that be atypical of what we would see? No, I just immediately go to the, well, if I wanted to break something, that's what I would do, like in that area.
Indeed. This is an atypical problem, but it's something that webmasters should probably think about.
Yeah.
Moving, what was it? It's sometime this month. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's in May. It was supposed to be March. Now it's May that they're kicking in.
Yeah.
Did you see the major fluctuations in search results over the last 3, maybe 4 weeks? There's been breathless talk about algorithm update after algorithm update.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know the major change that happened?
What?
The expiry date on mobile first happened. March 1st was the drop dead date.
Yeah.
I think a whole bunch of the volatility might be because of that.
It could be, I suppose, actually, yeah, right, because I was like, no, but we've already been, yeah, but that doesn't mean everybody, the entire web has been, right, like, just because you have already dealt with those issues, you're still going to win and lose based on what other people have done, better or worse.
And so, let's say people were putting this off until the last minute, or didn't do it at all. March 1st, March 5th, March, whenever rolls around, and Google is going through update after update after update with this new criteria locked in. And by the way, this is all speculation. Mm-hmm. We do know that they announced that March 1st was their mobile first drop dead date. That is for real. That happened. What they're doing with that is speculation. But I believe that that's the cause of a lot of the volatility we're seeing, because Google is just reviewing their databases over and over and over again against whatever smartphone they're rendering your site on.
Well, and something else worth mentioning here is back in December, they were testing an icon by search results for page experience. It then included Core Web Vitals, HTTPS, mobile, stuff like that. But Core Web Vitals was in there, and obviously with the number of sort of signals that draws in, it looks like it would have been a significant factor, but it might be an equal factor. But either way, Core Web Vitals is going to play into whether you get that icon or not. And that icon, if I'm sitting on my phone and I have a bunch of sites that have this icon that tell me, hey, if you click this link, it's going to go well. And one that's like, yeah, this thing might take 8 seconds to load. Which one am I going to click?
Right? Like, sure.
So taking SEO out of it, I'm not taking this as an SEO signal, just going, remembering, of course, that I'm not actually an SEO because my clients want to rank well. I'm an SEO because my clients want traffic. Now, ranking well can get them traffic, but that icon can get them traffic too. So
yep.
My traffic driving up. The client is more interested on how their organic traffic is doing than where they're positioned specifically. So...
Well, that brings me back to this lawsuit, that this class action lawsuit that I understand is forming out there around the warning that Google was giving about secured sites.
Right.
Notice that warning isn't up there much anymore. But Google was putting a warning up. That, you know, at one time, Google would scare the bejesus out of a web surfer, because you don't want to click on a link that's not secure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm gonna get phone herpes or something. There's no way I'm touching that. So, like, And that's what, that's something to that effect runs through the user's head. If not phone herpes, phone gonorrhea, something worse. And nobody wants that. Trust marks that Google puts, and people got caught in that, not because their websites were screwed up, but because some third-party application they were running in the background hadn't gone over to HTTPS. Right. Nobody's information was at risk in any, at any part in the exchange servers that were happening. No one's private information was going to be risked, but Google still put the "you can't trust these guys" mark up against so many websites.
Yeah.
I worry about that with core, with a little mark for Core Web Vitals as well. Like, this might be actually a good, important website that the application that Google's rendering against mightn't even run on the cell phone you're loading it on. But nevertheless, that mark is up there saying, please don't, or don't you dare click here because you might get phone herpes.
Oh, and I remember when PageSpeed, like when the Insights tool first came out, and of course we all sort of like, those are like the fun SEO signals, and even when they're not direct, you might go, well, okay, this is going to be fun because I can do a thing and then see a number. Like, rarely does that happen in SEO where you're like, and 2 seconds later I hit refresh and I can see what just happened. What did I just do? And I remember times where I would actually, like going through GT metrics or something, actually slow down my speed, but my score was going up, right? Like, where I can make my Core Web Vitals move positive without actually producing any real world impact on my actual speed, right? Like, these things can happen. So, you know, not even in getting into like Uber manipulation, right? Like, where you're actually screwing with things just to do that, but we're going, oh, let's try this kind of caching. And that's the sort of thing I was doing when I was first playing around with the Insights tool. It's like, okay, let's test this caching. I go like, okay, I actually slowed down my site, but it's seeing a bunch of new signals and it's going, oh, okay, Dave, you know, is doing the best he can. It's like, no, that actually isn't how that should work.
Well, for what it's worth, browser caching is going to slow down your site first paint. First second, paint. Third, fourth, fifth. After the like, subsequent loads should then speed up your site, right?
Yeah, it should.
Okay.
But there I'm also referring to page caching, like where you're just, but I put a load on my server, so it's slowed, but they're going, well, but there's less. Anyway, we can, as SEOs, sort of muck about. I've been playing a lot with it, and I just made our site jump 30 points with like almost no change in any actual real speed impact. But our Core Web Vitals and our Page Speed Insights, well, our Core Web Vitals didn't improve that much. Our Page Speed score did. And that's just where all these numbers end up being a bit misleading, where we can sort of screw with them just because we know how it's done without actually benefiting our users all that much.
You know what I want to know? The question I want asked?
What?
Google, we know that Google renders in the Chrome environment over for cell phones, right?
Yeah.
We also know that Chrome is a bloody resource hog that makes your computer run like a snail on Quaaludes. I wonder if Google's use of this crap-ass Chrome on their servers can affect my Core Web Vitals score.
Right. And my site's being judged by how my, you know, because they have the real world one, right? Like, where it's like, okay, but my site's being judged by my kid who has 85 tabs open in Chrome. And now my site's loading a little slower than maybe I might like anyway. You know, I guess all is equal in the world.
Okay, so we were talking about the cool stuff. We were talking about how hard SEO is a little while ago, but also all the cool stuff you can do with the. This is a weird one. I'm not sure how I feel about this again. Google's testing displaying cost estimates in local search results. So again, more Google My Business magic. Is the price might be right, wrong? When you can give Google a range, an estimate for prices of, I guess, hard estimates for retail goods and soft estimates for service sectors services. That's kind of cool, I think.
I'm not sure exactly where it's all coming from. I know it's pulled, like, we're not giving this to them specifically, like it's not through like their ad feeds or something like that. So I think they're just sort of going, in aggregate, this is what we're seeing in reviews or whatnot. And they're pulling this. I found it interesting though. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, this is, I guess, a benefit. Like as a user, it's nice to know, like if I called a roof repair company, right, to know, okay, it should kind of cost within this, but it's like calling an SEO going, okay, how much is it going to cost to fix this? When you have the sites we were talking about earlier, I have a 10 million page site, right? This uber complicated. And I happen to be looking, and it's like a local SEO company that probably maybe shouldn't pitch on that project to begin with, but like where their averages are being ripped, right, and sort of displayed based on perhaps the wrong metrics, and showing some sort of like lower, sort of lower tier or some specific applications, and going, okay, you've now just sent somebody to me who would be expecting a package in this price range. And then they're coming with a monster sort of project, because that's roof repair, not roof replacement, right? But if I was looking at roof replacement and happened to look this in and went, well, it says 272 is the high end. Like, no, that's not how all of this works. It would be kind of funny. But at the same time, I do think with some tweaking, it'll learn. I do think it is a benefit to let people know. I actually think a lot of the real professionals might appreciate having this low end showing up. So like, basically, don't call me if you don't even have that, right? Like if you're going to try and undersell me, I know where my low end is and you know where that is too. One of the things I had a problem with in that one is that they're actually differentiating the labor and material costs. And I'm like, okay, because now you know where you can negotiate more, right? Like you're almost handing this power of negotiation to the person who is about to make that call.
Yeah, and
they know the material cost is fixed.
And that may be good for consumers. That may be,
yeah.
It may also accelerate more race to the bottom in the service sector.
That's my concern. And these are hardworking people who deserve to be paid fairly for their hours, just like you do, just like I do, just like our listeners do.
Given that we're service sector workers, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree with that, Dave.
Yes, exactly.
Here's the thing. This is cool. I mean, again, this is good for the. This is, I think, probably very good for the consumer. But yeah. I do not want to have to have. I don't know. I guess all industries come to this. But I don't want to have my ad competing against my listing competing against my colleagues' listings in this. But I guess that's what it comes to, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just another way to differentiate our services.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put mine in the highest bracket possible just to weed stuff out.
Yeah. Well, and that's what you'd hit like if SEO, and the price range is $5 to $50,000 per month or something, right? Like just this like massive swing over. Well, are you going to Fiverr?
I mean, you know how it goes. It really depends, right?
One more time. There we go.
Okay. We've gone around the clock.
Yep.
I love it when the timing works out like almost down to the second. I love that. Friends, you've heard an extraordinarily well-timed version of Webcology on WMR.FM. On behalf of Dave Davies from BSOC Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, and we'd like to remind you that it's been a full year, and it's been a really, really hard year. A lot of sacrifice and a lot of suffering. And we are so, so close to getting to the getting our world on the path back to normal again. Do your part. Wear a mask. Keep social distancing. Be aware that COVID is still real. Protect your neighbors. Protect yourself. Protect your community. And we're going to get past this thing. Get vaccinated when you can. Stay safe. Rank well. And we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.